This is Wells Tech, a weekly show exploring the intersections of technology and ministry. Your hosts are Sally Draper and Martin Spriggs. Wells Tech is produced by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Hello again, everybody. This is Wells Tech, episode 538, recorded on February 27th, 2018. My name is Martin Spriggs, and you've joined a show about technology and ministry, and we're really happy that you did. And when I say we have not just the usual suspects, myself and Sally Draper, by the way. Welcome, Sally.
Thanks, sir.
We also have Rachel Feld from MLC. And remind us, Rachel, what your official business card says.
I am the director of academic computing and online learning, meaning I'm in charge of all the academic computing and online learning.
And we knew you before you had that title. We had you as our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent way back when you were down back here in Wisconsin in Kenosha, maybe down there someplace.
Racine? You are correct. It was Kenosha, first and second grade for 11 years. Definitely miss Wisconsin. Minnesota's great, but love Wisconsin.
Well, you'll get used to it eventually, right, Sally?
That's right. And then you'll live in an RV and leave.
That's right. You're getting an RV and leave eventually. That's just how it works in Minnesota.
Apparently.
All right. Well, we are, as you might have guessed, when we have Rachel on, we deal with educational topics. And actually, it's been an education month, right, Sally? We have spent some time talking about training topics, and especially training your volunteers, training, we're calling it training techies, and we've talked about all kinds of different things from worship projection and just all kinds of other things, database, etc. We've now reached the point where we want to talk about something that I think every organization has and needs people to manage, and that's websites.
Right, and of course, with Rachel on, we want to specifically focus in on school and particularly teacher web presence. And, you know, it kind of conflicts a little with our title of training techies, because you can't always be sure that the teacher would consider themselves a techie. It's sometimes pushing the teacher into an area that maybe they aren't as comfortable to expect that they would have some type of web presence. And also, it might cross over to a lot of different types of web presence depending on what they're trying to communicate, because they need to communicate with prospective students and parents and with their current students and parents, and it gets to be pretty complicated for the teacher, I think.
Rachel, what's been your experience with the use of websites and as a communications channel? Yeah, you were lower grades, so your kids weren't maybe using the websites to grab homework assignments, those kinds of things, but you probably had other uses for it?
Sure. Early in my 11 years of first and second grade world, I used the classroom website as a great go-to place for parents. You know, your spelling list got breakfast spilled all over it. Mm-hmm. Check the website. There's a new one. Your daughter's memory workbook mysteriously has disappeared for the eighth time. It's on the website. So that was my first use, I think, of classroom websites, was just a place to point parents for the things that they needed. It's definitely grown in my years of teaching to be more of a place for prospective parents to go, kind of a outreach / advertising tool. So I wanted it to be a glimpse into my classroom. If you were a first and second grader, what would it look like? What kinds of things are we learning? What's the atmosphere? What kind of technology do we have? So I just in the purpose of the website, and so had to introduce some new tools, but I think it was a good shift.
I was just kind of formulating a question. I was thinking, well, now in the position that you're in, Rachel, maybe you could give us a little glimpse into what's in the curriculum as far as what are you teaching you know, our next generation teachers about, you know, web technologies and some of the tools that are now available to them. Is that even something that you deal with? Because there's so many different ones, and it may be different, obviously, when they get in the ministry, too. What are you training them with and on?
You're absolutely right. One of the big challenges is just the huge amount of tools that are possible to use. So in our Teaching with Tech class, we look at classroom websites. I encourage them to look at their grade school website, see what it looks like, what kind of information they have, and just kind of consider what kind of content they would want to have, what their audience they think would be. And then as far as tools, I try to introduce them to as many as possible. We definitely look at Google Sites because we are a G Suite school here at MLC. So we have availability for that. But there are other tools that we look at too. There's some communication tools, Blooms we can talk about, or some school management tools to really kind of encompass all the possible audiences and how we can communicate with them.
And probably one of the biggest challenges is the fact that you have no clue what they're going to encounter when they go out there to their schools. Because if we were to take a cross-section of Wells LESs, for instance, I bet we would find some that are doing things very consistently across the whole school, but many others that everyone's just doing their own thing. So in this grade, it may be using Blooms, and in the next grade, it may be using Google Classroom or, a website using Final Web or whatever it may be. And so that's a big challenge when there's so many different options out there.
It really is. And I think an encouragement I would give to schools is to sit down, leaders, principal, school board, maybe a couple of teachers, sit down and think, what is our plan? What kind of website do we want to have? Do you want it to be able to be updated by teachers? And then looking at your teachers, are they going to have the tools to do that, the knowledge? And to make that plan, and how are you going to implement that plan? And then how are you going to train those that are involved? If it's teachers that are going to be doing the updating, no matter what tool you're using, that training is really important. During the school year, it's so hard to find time. You only have so many in-service days, and you want to use those to do curriculum studies and talk about your school handbook and catch up on grading and, you know, clean out the sports supply closet. The list of things to do is endless, but if you're going to make a concerted effort to use technologies in this area, that training is vital.
It's interesting. I was presenting at a conference this past weekend, Men of His Word, and I had a chance to sit in on somebody else's presentation, Aaron Bauer. Maybe you know him. He does a presentation on love and logic. And he's a self-professed technophobe, at least he was, and he recounted the time where his school, I think it was at Garden Homes maybe here in Milwaukee, implemented these online, you know, course management, LMS type tools and asked everybody to use them. And he was kicking and screaming into it. I'm hoping I'm characterizing his comments correctly. But after a couple years, he really recognized the value of the consistency and, you know, putting your lesson plans in and, you know, using that for digital purposes, just how easy it is to tweak it once you put in the hard work, becomes a lot easier scenario down the road just to make some changes versus rewriting your lesson plan each and every year. So I think there are benefits just beyond the communication side, the organization side, the standards, the ability to have some consistency as students move up through the grades. Obviously, the parent communication channel, they get used to something. And having this diversity from classroom to classroom isn't really good for anybody.
Yeah, I'm just struck by the fact that I bet it plays well into WELSA accreditation or any type of accreditation as well. So all valuable things to a school that make it more appealing to prospective parents and students as they're evaluating the school as well.
I think you're both absolutely right. And I know something I struggle with is that I am a tech-minded person. So when my principal would suggest doing tech things, I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds great. And reminding myself that not everyone thinks that way.
You're probably not even in the majority. I mean, you're a minority, probably. And that's probably still the case on a lot of faculties.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that's where providing the training becomes even more important, that you have that why behind it. This is what learning this is going to give you. If you learn how to use this tool, here's the time it's going to save you. Here's how it's going to benefit your students. Here's how it will benefit our school. And then stick with that tool. I'm totally guilty of saying, oh, this is brand new and looks really cool, so let's try it out. But as a whole school, kind of sticking with one for as long as you can, as long as is feasible and workable, to maintain that consistency and really to honor the time that teachers have put into learning it, so that that time doesn't feel like it's wasted.
Yeah, the grass isn't always greener, and there is some, you have to kind of weigh the cost of, and that's not just financial cost, but human capital cost, and some of the goodwill maybe you've been able to foster amongst your faculty, you may lose in the course of a summer when you're saying, well, we're going to try Schoology now, and next summer we're going to try Google Classroom. And you mentioned something that came to mind, and in my experience, this has been absolutely the case, that if there is a program worth doing, there is a period of time before that even gets rolled out that you do the due diligence, that you document, that you ask the hard questions, that you say, here's the problem or problems we're trying to solve. Here are the things that we think it will solve. Here's what we looked at as alternatives. Document all that and then, kind of use that as your roadmap and then keep that thing up to date. That's kind of your plan, your strategic plan. Then you can kind of you have some solid ground. It's not just based on conversations or feelings or what the principal wants to do. I mean, there's been more energy put into it, and it seems to carry a little bit more weight if you put it down on paper and say, yeah, we did think through this, and we asked the questions, and we met on this, and we came out the other end with a better product as a result. We felt better about it. So there's some investment on the front end necessary. And then you mentioned something also that is really critical. You still need a champion. I think you need that expert, that person who's going to be that go-to. When times get tough or somebody needs encouraging or somebody, at 10 o'clock at night needs to call somebody to say, hey, I can't get my lesson plan in here. I can't get an assignment uploaded, or I can't enter a grade. That person needs to exist versus just kind of a bunch of people who kind of know it, but there really is no de facto go-to type assistant there.
Exactly. And maybe that person isn't at your school. Maybe,
oh, good point. Yeah.
Maybe they're at a neighboring school, the next town over or something like that. Or with technology can bring people closer together. So it doesn't have to be someone at your school. Reach out, find what schools nearby are using. I would also add, when you're studying tools, not to always go right to the free ones. I know free tools are awesome, but sometimes you get what you pay for, and adding a little bit of monetary investment will make your teachers' lives easier. And a lot of time that money also behind it is extra training that is included in your price, or a video series, or live tech support or something like
support,
that.
Support, yeah, big time. Mm-hmm.
All that talk of support and training reminds me that it's not a one and done kind of deal. It's something that has to be ongoing. So you may develop the errands and on your faculty who do figure out after 4 years that, this is a good thing and they're comfortable with it and that kind of thing. But as soon as they figure that out, they tend to take a call and leave your faculty, and you start all over from ground zero with new teachers. And even those that are comfortable with it, things change, and they just need refreshers. So it's not something that you can put aside. The training needs to be ongoing.
That's where you need that mentor cross-training mentality that we talked about maybe a couple of weeks back, that you know, really can't be just that one person either. Even if that second person is not the expert that the first person is, at least there's a base, you know, that's been built, and then an expectation that they can take it to the next level if needed. Because yeah, faculties change all the time.
Definitely. So yeah, go out there and get those websites done, folks, but put some time and thought and policy behind it so that you're doing it well and you're not shooting yourself in the foot with new things or varied things throughout your school.
Rachel, you mentioned a couple times Blooms, BLOOMZ.net. That's not one that I am actually familiar with. Can you tell us a little bit about that tool? What's it for?
Sure. So Blooms in the last, I think, two school years really replaced part of my classroom website, the part that I would point parents to for missing spelling lists and pictures of what was going on in the classroom. So it's a parent communication tool. It is very similar to Facebook, where you can, as a teacher, you can make posts of what's happening in the classroom, add photos, I think you can add videos, add documents, links to things. And it is arranged similarly to Facebook. I think that the learning curve is maybe not quite as steep in comparison to updating like a classroom website in Final Web or something like that. And the privacy and safety of a tool like this is really, for me, one of the biggest benefits. I knew that I could take a bunch of pictures on a field trip, post them all on our Blooms site, and only parents or people I had approved could see what I had posted. So when you're talking about photo permissions and things like that, it keeps it in this walled gate where I don't have to worry about who's doing what as much with my students' photos and information.
Excellent. I'm all for Facebook type communication. That's, they've set a good standard for us, it seems. And I think people are more apt to get engaged because it's something they're familiar with, that kind of interface. So sounds like a great tool.
And this is one that is free, and actually it does a good job of being a free tool. There are apps for mobile devices, and you can get at it from a website. So parents can pick and choose how they like to be notified of things, whichever system works best for them.
Cool. Good stuff.
Cool. We'll have some other links in the show notes for some of the technologies that are out there. But I think the encouragement's there that there is a process maybe that you ought to be thinking about as you go about this. Be a little bit strategic about it versus, well, we need to do this. Let's grab something and hope for the best. So, all right. Well, that's a great way to finish up our month-long conversation about training techies. And I think this is a perfect fit because I think almost every organization, let alone school, has to figure this stuff out. So, Rachel, thanks for your insight. Sally, why don't we move on to the next segment in our show, which is Wells Now.
Yeah, we have a couple of things to share in the Wells Now segment today, one of which is a reminder about a fantastic tool that's part of the Wells.net website. It's called Questions and Answers, and it's a place to go to ask faith-based questions. And it's got a robust history behind it, so you can go there and search all the different categories that are available in the Q&A, from baptism to fellowship to Lord's Supper and on and on. You can look through recent questions and read how they were answered. So just kind of following the conversation thread and hearing the answers to things. And you can also ask a question. So if you don't find something that addresses the question that you have, there's an Ask a Question link on the site as well. I see the photo of Professor James Pope. He's a professor of theology and staff ministry at Martin Luther College, and he is currently one of the key answerers of the Q&A tool, and does a fantastic job with putting the answers out there to the questions people are asking. So great tool.
Great resource. I've seen it used in a lot of different ways. I've seen it used at the catechism class level. I've seen it used at the Bible class level. I've seen it used for personal Bible study. Just a lot of great topics and very timely, because these questions aren't made up by us, you know, at the synod level. They're coming in from people in the pew saying, I was talking to my neighbor about this or about that, and they ask the question and we answer it. So, and the answers are not usually a single paragraph, but with Bible references and just kind of a mini Bible study for each one of them. So real awesome tool.
Definitely. One more thing, Wellsy to mention, and this one is specifically Wells Techie. It is the Wells Tech Skills site. This is a clearinghouse for those who are interested in sharing their skills, whatever they may be, in the area of technology for use in ministry. And we invite people to add their digital resume, per se, to the mix on the Wells Skills site. And then we invite others to come here and search for things, skill sets that you're looking for, and make use of those who have registered here. So skills.wellstech.net is the URL for the Wells Tech Skills site.
Yep, take advantage of that. You can just browse, or you can get an account and post your stuff. So we're trying to make some technology connections there. So let's make it as useful as possible. Sally, I think that brings us to our picks of the week, a little segment where we each pick something that has kind of caught our interest, we found useful for ministry or otherwise, maybe just plain fun, and share it with everybody. So, Rachel, your honored guest, why don't you start with your pick of the week?
Excellent. So my pick of the week is probably my favorite piece of tech that I've bought in the past 6 months, 8 months. I got it in October, I think, as an early birthday present to myself. It's the Apple Pencil, which is Apple's stylus, and you have to have an iPad Pro, so I also had to buy a new iPad for myself.
Of course.
That was just the extra little thing you bought.
There are worse things in the world.
You need an iPad to go with your Apple Pencil.
Yeah. Yes. So I have always been on a hunt for a stylus that would mimic writing with a regular pen, because I'm always losing notebooks or forgetting what notebook I wrote something in. And so this stylus uses Bluetooth to communicate with your iPad. It is pressure sensitive and just does by far the best job of mimicking a real writing device that I have seen. I use it for taking notes at meetings, for annotating PDFs for graduate classes, for coloring. If you enjoy like the adult coloring books that are supposed to be relaxing, it does a really nice job of that. And all around, just I think a really great investment. They're $99, which isn't cheap as far as a pencil is concerned, but definitely worth it from my perspective.
Yeah, probably more than 1,000 times more expensive than a regular pencil.
Yes.
I, too, have an Apple Pencil. I don't have all the uses. I do take notes with it, and I do sign documents with it. But I would agree with you. It's one of the neat things I like about it is the ability, how fast it charges. Mm-hmm. I have to charge it with the iPad itself, and it's kind of funky where you have to put it in the end. It sticks out there. But you can charge it up from 0 to 100 in 15, 20 minutes. It's not bad. So it's that part is really convenient versus setting it on a charger, plugging it into something else. It is a nice bit of tech. I like it myself.
Next time I visit headquarters there, Martin, I'll show you how to color with your Apple Pencil.
Right. I was never very good at coloring, either inside the lines or outside the lines, but I leave that to my wife. She's the artist, but I've heard good things about adult coloring books. I just have not jumped in, so that's pretty cool. What apps do you use with it?
For that, I use an app called Procreate. It is not a free app. I think it was $5. But that's the best one as far as art and drawing. I just import a PDF and then you just color in the lines.
Yep. Cool.
And you write and you don't. So.
What are you taking notes on? That's something we've talked about on the show before, too.
My favorite one for that is called PDF. I think it's called PDF Pro. It's by Readle, R-E-A-D-D-L-E. Also not free, but does a really nice job at being able to categorize your PDFs, annotate, highlight, use different colors, that kind of thing. So,
and that's
very
what you're taking notes in as well?
If I'm going to take notes just by it themselves, like at a meeting, I use something called GoodNotes.
Okay.
Currently. We'll see if that sticks.
There's a bunch of them, right?
There are quite
a few. Sally, if I recall correctly, use Notability. Is that right?
Right. Notability is the one that I'd made use of. Uh-huh.
Cool. And I use OneNote, and that works great too. So, all right. Very good pick. Thanks, Rachel. Sally, you're up next.
My turn. And with the education focus, I headed over to Free Tech for Teachers, a popular blog that's been around for a long time now, run by Richard Byrne. He has a new offshoot blog called Practical Ed Tech. And I found an interesting article about plugins and add-ons for adding images to documents and slides. And interestingly, he has some Google apps for education add-ons and plugins, but he also has some that work with Microsoft Word and PowerPoint. And one of the main things that he is championing there is the Pixabay website, which is a very popular Creative Commons image site where you can find all types of imagery. So specifically, Pixabay Free Images is a Google Doc add-on. And I've installed it in my Google Docs. So those that are watching, you can just go to the add-ons and say Pixabay Free Images, search images. And perhaps I might be looking for lavender fields. And I can just type that in. I can spell it right. And get search results. And just click on an image and drag it over to my document. It's that easy. It's there. And is linked to Pixabay if you want to click on it and go to the site. So lots of selection comes up. Pixabay has a huge database of beautiful imagery. And so that's just one use of it in Google Docs. Like I said, there's a plugin for Microsoft Word and PowerPoint to do the same thing. And if you aren't a Pixabay fan or if you want other options, the article includes links to other plugins that you can use to search Unsplashed, which is another large repository of imagery that's licensed with Creative Commons. So you can get those free images in there as well. So nice to have that built right into your document creation.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Awesome. All right. I'm up then. My pick of the week is Waze. Waze is a mapping app available on iPhone or Android, a couple different versions. They basically work the same. So if you use Google Maps or Apple Maps, same kind of concept. Actually, Waze is owned by Google, but they've kind of maintained a separate presence. It's got a little bit different flavor to it, and it's more social driven. So Waze is a place where you can note accidents, construction, those kinds of things, and that gets shared with everybody else using Waze. So it becomes a kind of a real-time update notification type app and really takes advantage of that. You know, gas prices, et cetera, are all kind of plugged in here by the Waze community. That's Waze.com. Now they have a website and it just kind of gives you a little bit of information. I can also share the app itself if all goes well. Here, let's try that for those of you watching at home. And Waze, the app, kind of has a more of a fun look. Ooh, is that actually showing up?
Yeah, I see.
You see a big map, don't you?
On your way to Aurora Health Center, Germantown.
And it's talking to me.
Giving you directions, huh?
Yep. I don't think I can get it small enough to show it on the screen. Anyway, the app itself does a real nice job. Because it uses Google data, it's very accurate, which I gave up Apple Maps a long time ago. I've given it a couple shots, and it just doesn't get any better. Google Maps is excellent at getting you to the right place, and Waze is even better because it kind of gives you that real-time update from other Wazers, and you can do all kinds of things with it. It's got big buttons so that it's easy to hit, you know, while you're driving. It talks to you. You can talk to it. You have all kinds of different voices. I have the nice British lady talking to me. It gives you your speed. It gives you the local speed limit, which Google Maps does not, or at least I haven't found out how to do that. I thought it used to, but I can't find that it does that anymore. You can save different favorite locations. You can send a Waze. I don't know if they call it a Waze, but you can send it to different people so they can track your progress and get an ETA on your time. There are all kinds of different things that you can report, as I mentioned. You know, if there's a traffic jam or construction, or you can even correct the maps. So it's actually something that is more dynamic. So if there is a detour, it looks like a permanent detour, that gets reported in Waze before it does in other applications as well. So I'm really sold on it. It's free. There's not even a premium option, I don't think. It's free from start to finish, and just gives a nice experience. So I'm a big fan at this point, and I've been using it for a few weeks now after I was kind of looking for a little bit better solution. And come summer, when we hit the vacation trail, I'll be looking for its performance in, you know, driving a little bit over the country as well, so, and other locations. So that is my pick of the week, Waze, Waze.com. What do you guys use for your mapping apps?
I also use Waze. I've been using it for a couple of years now. I found it was the best at rerouting around traffic incidents in Milwaukee. Not a huge issue here in New Ulm, thankfully. Right. but I found it to be the most reliable and accurate, all those things you said. Also, a year or two ago, it had C-3PO as a voice, which was just wildly entertaining and made it a joy to drive anywhere. So
that's great. I guess I'm behind the times and use Google Maps, but have looked at several different ones to use for RVing, because when you're in an RV, you have to be concerned about things like height restrictions and going under low clearance and not banging your RV into an overhead bridge. So we'll see how that goes.
We don't want that.
Yes. We do not want that. Bad picture.
Yeah, Waze has the ability to there's a feature that says avoid dirt roads. That might come in handy out in the Ulm area, right? You can avoid ferries. That's probably not as big a deal there. Tolls, those kinds of things. I think some of those are available in Google Maps as well. But that's kind of nice. So you can kind of route it. There was a time, I don't know, maybe a year ago, I was going to Michigan. And to get to Michigan from Wisconsin, you've got to go through Chicago. And Chicago has the tollway. And if you forget your I-Pass, it is a total bummer to get through Chicago. You pay twice as much to start with, but then you're really backed up. And it takes you probably a good half hour to an hour longer, depending on the time of day, to get through Chicago if you don't have your I-Pass. So I just plugged in no tollways. Now, it may have taken me longer than actually having the I-Pass, but I saved some money, saw some roads I hadn't seen before, but I got around Chicago without any tolls whatsoever, and I was a happy guy.
I've heard you can get to Michigan through the UP as well.
I've done that too. No tolls up there. You just have to watch out for deer and, you know, whatever, speed traps. I had a ticket up in the UP once.
No fun.
All right. I think that moves us down to our ministry resource.
Yeah. We were talking with Rachel in our pre-show planning, and one thing that she mentioned that she is really excited about is a site called insertlearning.com. I have it up on my computer and can share a screen. Maybe, Rachel, you could tell us a little bit about Insert Learning.
Sure. So there is a Chrome extension for Insert Learning. It's for teachers. And as a teacher, you can create your account, create your classroom, install the extension. And then on the side of any website, you get some tools to add instructional content to the website. So you can, as the teacher, add a sticky note. Maybe you want to point something out in what the students are looking at. You can add a question. You can highlight specific parts that maybe the students need to focus on. And then back at your Insert Learning dashboard, you can assign it to your students. And it integrates with Google Classroom quite well. So if that's something that you use in your class, that makes it easier. And then when the students go through their Insert Learning / Google account to that website, they see what you've put on there. So they might have to, you know, read a paragraph and answer a question. Or, you know, it asks them to do a little multiple choice thing or something like that. Or you can insert a video if you find a video that maybe explains what they're reading a little better or adds some more to it. And then back at your teacher dashboard, you can see what your students have done. So if they've answered questions, you can see how they did, if they've added comments or whatever. And so it really lets you as a teacher kind of have a little more control over their experience with whatever website you're pointing them to. You can guide them through it without having to sit right next to them.
That is so awesome. I'm going to see if I can figure out how to use that in my ALHS online course with coding, because there's lots of application for that, lots of instructional videos, discussions, or even a little mini assessments. So is this something that you have to use with Google and Chrome and Google Classroom, or can it be used, let's say, in a Moodle environment or something like that?
I don't know is that you would have to use Google Classroom. I'm pretty sure you would have to use Chrome. Although I haven't checked to see if there's a Firefox version of the extension, but you need that extension. Okay. If you were using it in a place like Moodle or a different learning management system, you would get your unique link, your teacher link to that website, and you could share that with your students.
And tag, Rachel?
I'm pretty sure it's free.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Great ministry resource. Thank you.
Let's move on. Community feedback. We heard from Joe Dexter from Emmanuel New London.
We did. I was going to ask, if you hear Emmanuel New London, you normally think of
Gail Potras.
Yeah. Where she served for many years. And apparently she has great people working with her, because I got a phone call from Joe, and he's worked with audio video for the congregation for many, many years. And he wanted to share with our Wells Tech community some changes that are coming down the pipe in relation to 600 megahertz wireless microphones. And I had heard about this in the past, actually some time ago, that they were going to put this band of, I don't know what you describe it. Spectrum, the 600 megahertz spectrum, 614 to 698 megahertz to be precise, up for sale. And it was sold to T-Mobile in April of 2017. Now, they say that anyone using the band can use it through July of 2020 unless T-Mobile begins to use it themselves. And T-Mobile is aggressively beginning to use the band, and that's going to affect people that have wireless microphones that run in this band. And what he shared was a link that someone's put together of areas
there over Wisconsin.
Yeah, exactly, including the New London area. So it was affecting them. These are areas where it's begun to be built out by T-Mobile using that spectrum of wireless megahertz, whatever. I'm not very good at describing that. Sorry.
You got it. Yeah.
And so what that means is if you have wireless microphones that are operating in that band, you need to replace them. And for Joe, he told me they had 10 of them and the replacement cost is perhaps $1,000 a piece. We're talking a lot of money to replace your wireless mics potentially. But there is good news, and that was one of the reasons Joe felt some urgency to share this with our audience, and that is several of the large microphone vendors, including Shure and Audio Technica, have rebates out there. So if you buy replacement microphones from them and satisfy their rebate requirements, then they will give you a discount. And for sure, it was like a 25% rebate. So a $1,000 mic becomes a $750 mic. And that's pretty significant savings when you have 10 of them to buy. I think he told me they only replaced 7 of them and they got by for about $5,000 expense.
Ouch. But yeah. But
yeah. And they went with Shure microphones. And unfortunately, that rebate program is ending on April 30th. So you basically have 2 more months if you want to get in on the Shure rebate program. And like I said, there are very specific requirements for the rebate to satisfy. And so you want to follow their instructions carefully. And I emphasize this because Joe said they had a little trouble because they wanted you to send in the packaging from the new microphones, and he had tossed the packaging from the new microphones. And so they had to do a little bit of work to get that straightened out. But, you know, just read their requirements. And if you're interested in the Shure rebate, and we'll have a link in the show notes, just follow their requirements very closely and do it before April 30th. The Audio Technica rebate goes through March 31st, 2019. So you have more time with theirs. And I'm not sure exactly of the percentage rebate involved in theirs. There was another vendor that had a rebate and it's already expired. And so these are the two that he was aware of, both of them being major microphone vendors. And so check out this, check your wireless mics and see if you're in that spectrum. And if you are, this is something you probably need to look into taking care of and budget for it and get it done.
I wonder if that coverage is going to expand so that map may, those areas may creep into other parts of the country.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then it becomes more of more than just Northern Wisconsin's problem or wherever else they are. Becomes a bigger problem for a lot of our churches or schools.
Right. And ultimately it becomes a problem for everyone in the continental United States as of 2020.
Okay.
But this is the state of it right now where T-Mobile has started to build out.
Okay.
But yeah.
So they could, it could be a much greater problem.
World, potentially. Yep. Yeah. Right. So something worth paying attention to. And if you're interested in Shure microphones, pay attention to it in the next 2 months to receive.
Yep. Check your mic, see if they're in that 600 megahertz spectrum first. All right. Yeah. I think we talked, I want to say we talked about this a while back.
But it was a long time
maybe
ago.
It was even a different spectrum. I don't remember.
It could have been. And yeah, that's why I was like, yeah, we've talked about that before, but it was years ago.
And I thought it was Verizon who would purchase it then. So that this is an ongoing problem. So
yeah, get it in a spectrum that they aren't going to sell if possible.
Yes. Yeah, for sure. All right. Sally, we have a video of the week.
We do, from our friends at Koine. Thought it was time for a little bit of Lenten reflection with their hymn, Oh Dearest Jesus. So tune in to the Wells Tech show notes blog to enjoy that video.
And it's the end of February, and we'll be headed into March here for our next episode. And throughout the season here, the school year maybe is probably the best way to describe it. We have a monthly focus. So where are we headed next month?
Next month, we're going back to the basics, Martin. It's time to just take a look at those tools that we use every single day. Yeah,
huh?
Things like email and word processing and all those kind of fun basic tools. And, you know, looking at different tips and tricks to make your work efficient, different plugins or apps you might use, just how to do it well. And it'll be an interesting month.
Back to the basics. Mm-hmm. Rachel, thank you so much for joining us. We realize that you have a very busy schedule there, but you always bring your own brand of sunshine to our show. We really appreciate that.
You're welcome, Martin. It's a pleasure to be here. Always good fun.
And we'll see you in a couple months.
Sounds good.
Take care. And thank you, everybody, for joining us. We love it that you tune in, whether that's every week or, you know, whenever you can, whatever you can, that's okay with us. Just bring your friends next time, and we'll talk to you on episode 539 in March of 2018. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.